Poutini friends, welcome in. You're listening to Jawa Chatter, where we actually love Star Wars, and I couldn't be more happy about Star Wars than today.
Yay.
What do you mean by we actually love Star Wars?
What?
Some people don't like Star Wars. They just like to complain about Star Wars, from what I can see from the internet every single day.
That's such a strong opening.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. With me are my co-hosts today.
Strong takes. Claudia. Start of the day. Hi.
Nerdy.
Jeffers got COVID and apparently decided to intro completely differently than every other time we've done this.
I introed completely differently yesterday. Last week? Yeah. It hasn't hit my brain yet, though it sounds like it may have. It hasn't.
There's some brain fog here, folks.
There is not. Lord. All right.
You usually do an intro about how I like things and Claudia doesn't know things. I don't even know. I don't pay attention while you're talking. I'm usually making funny faces.
See? There you go. So it doesn't
matter. You did none of it this week, though.
It's okay. You got to mix it up. Sometimes you got to keep people on their toes, mm-hmm. like you yourself. And look, it snapped you back into position. You're like, whoa, what's up? What's going on? How's it going? You were here.
Oh, I'm always ready. I'm always ready to talk about Star Wars, especially when Finale of Kenobi dropped and we got that.
What? This is getting worse.
Did you just word vomit Kenobi with the weirdest accent I've ever heard?
Is this the same person that just made fun of my intro 2 seconds ago?
Okay, but I'm dyslexic. So when words struggle hard for me, I go circles around them.
Fair enough.
It's just a thing. I'm not embarrassed. Makes me laugh more than everybody else. Kenobi. Finale. Episode 6.
Episode 6. We
got all the cameos we expected. Quinlan Vos showed up. Cal Kestis showed up. Yoda showed up. Literally everyone they talked about online. Every single one of them was there.
Yeah, all of them. Every single one. Yeah, that's the end of the podcast. We're done. That's all you really need to know.
Great episode. Oh. Like, really, really great episode.
Oh, yeah. I mean, very emotional. I have not recovered. I will probably not recover anytime soon from it. I'll be thinking about this for a long time. There is a breakdown video on YouTube if you want to check it out. A lot of Easter eggs in this one, too. Just a lot of references back to, like, A New Hope, Revenge of the Sith, a lot of lines that came
Rebels.
Out. Rebels, like so many things.
I mean, I guess those are references forward, but like...
Yeah, there's references forwards, backwards, like it's all over the place, but it's great.
Do you think, and sorry to spoil this a little bit for you, Claudia, but do you think when this exact same thing happens between Ahsoka and Vader in 5 years, Vader is standing there being like, I've been here before.
This looks familiar.
Almost this exact same thing happened 5 years ago.
The difference was in that fight, he was actually winning, if I remember correctly. So he's winning pretty well.
He was winning this one for a while, but
for a while. Then he got his butt kicked real bad by God mode Obi-Wan Kenobi when he lifts all the rocks and just starts doing like a Pokemon attack and start doing rock throw. Boom, boom, boom.
Well, it was like an anime.
That's why I
went full anime.
That's why I made the joke.
And Clarice and I, we did our first like ever reaction.
I saw that. Yeah.
Which, based on the numbers, we're going to be doing a lot more of those.
Yeah.
Because it outpaced every other time we've ever talked about an episode of TV by 10 times. In that moment, I was like, the rocks around them, like the place they were fighting, reminded me so much of the fight between the Fire Lord Ozai and Aang at the end of Avatar.
Oh yeah! And it was just, oh my God,
that's
you're right.
Totally.
Like
fair.
Visually, their arenas. Obviously, the Avatar one was a lot larger rocks, but they were very similar.
Yeah.
It was a very funny comparison for me.
Yeah. I never put that one together. I mean, I was obviously thinking more towards like where does it connect Star Wars wise, but I wasn't thinking outside of that. Yeah, that's good. That's a good.
Well,
point.
It goes. Because they just start throwing rocks at each other. And so it just reminded me of Aang being like, and earthbending, and then rock, 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 rock.
Let's be clear. Vader did the earthbending thing, but he did not throw any rocks back. He just took every single rock over and over again.
Yeah, which was funny because they did no damage to him. But then when Obi-Wan, like, saber punched Vader in the chest, everything just, like, collapsed. I was like, that Obi-Wan's lightsaber must be made out of like the toughest material in the galaxy. Because he's just punching holes in Vader's armor I've never seen anyone in Star Wars use the butt end of a lightsaber.
Yeah, use the hilt.
To be fair, his like butt of the lightsaber is like a lot like, it's pretty detailed for other people's. Like, maybe that's his, like, little jousting moment.
I mean, he's right, though. I've never seen anyone who has a lightsaber in their hand actually, like, the closest I can think of it is when Maul, like, uppercuts Qui-Gon in the chin.
Yeah.
But that's one hit. He does one hit. It's very quick, and it's because he has a much longer handle. Whereas Obi-Wan's just, like, bashing the back of his lightsaber into the chest plate, and it's, I mean, and yeah, like, there he's right. He destroys
that. Well, and Vader does the Maul to Obi-Wan face move in this as well, which I thought was a fun little callback to Maul,
yeah,
where Obi-Wan keeps taking that like shot to the face.
Yep.
Yeah, it was such a fascinating episode because I think coming out of last week, I really had no idea how all of these storylines were going to intertwine with one another.
Zero. Yeah.
And I liked 95% of it. I think that if I were to have one kind of complaint about the episode, not really a complaint, but my one kind of like moment of questioning. Sure. Is where the conclusion was for Roken and the Grand Inquisitor and all of that. Like, it just, they kind of like flew away from the planet, and I would have liked some, a little bit of a bow to be tied on the rebellion itself and where that path was headed. Mm. Because it just felt a little bit strange that Obi-Wan takes off after the fight with Vader and the Death Star's not, or the Star Destroyer's not there anymore. And yeah. He flies away. And I was like, so what happened? Like,
yeah.
If there was another episode, I would be a little bit more fine with it. But I was just kind of like, so I guess everyone got home okay.
Like, where did they go and set up, like, you know, a new place to go? To be fair, like, they weren't like they were on Jakku for such a long time, and then they went over and they were like, yeah, we're just flying. We're trying to fix this, and it was like, okay,
yeah,
where to next, guys?
Yeah, I don't know.
Jakku?
Was it Jakku? Where was it?
No, they're not on Jakku in this.
What are you talking about?
What planet did they leave? Something with the J.
Jabim.
My bad.
Not yeah. Jim Beam. Jabim. But I would love if Jabim was a Jim Beam. If that was their way of like honoring Jim Beam by putting him in Star Wars. They're like,
that'd be
Dave
funny.
Filoni's drink of choice is Jim Beam. And so in this episode, yeah. They go to Jabim.
I don't know.
I can see them doing it.
I don't know. I wasn't too concerned with Roken and the Grand Inquisitor, just because the Grand Inquisitor pops up so much in later stuff. But like I understand what Nerdy's saying. The Star Destroyer just not being there for whatever reason is kind of weird. I guess they're just like...
I just wanted any sort of finish on
right,
that. Like,
for
I just
sure.
Wanted, I,
for sure.
It felt strange that the last thing we saw was the Star Destroyer hovering yeah, above yeah. the planet, and there just was no reference to it after
yeah, yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 for sure. And then
which is fine.
Roken, though, I feel like, although it would have been nice to have something of like, this is where at least where he's going or some kind of hint. But I'm taking that as hopefully we're going to see him again in something else. I don't know, like Andor
nice
or
job
I don't know. He did great. Like he did a great job.
Well, and so there has been some talk about Reva's the end of the season being edited for Reva to survive so that they can keep going with the character.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. Yeah.
There was a point in the episode, and I feel like we need to go back and talk about some of the beginning stuff of the episode. I feel like we've jumped over a lot, but this is just kind of a conversation about it. I feel like we don't really have a solid structure for this, but there was a point in the episode where the Obi-Wan Vader fight was over,
yeah,
and they needed to get to Reva and the Luke stuff on Tatooine,
mm-hmm.
and it felt like there was a little bit of the show missing to me. Because Vader just, like, gets back to his castle and he's great. And Leia just gets back to Alderaan and she's putting on her new clothes. And so it felt like there was some connective tissue in the episode that was missing.
Yep.
And I wonder if there was something there, if there was a Roken going somewhere, if there was a how did Vader get back. And if that ties into what Reva's original storyline was before they decided to not kill her in the episode, if that's true. If that was never true and the plan was always for Reva to be alive, then obviously none of what I'm saying matters. But it felt like the cut between the Reva putting down her lightsaber on Tatooine to Vader just being fully resplendent in his armor again in Mustafar and then Leia in Alderaan, it just felt like there was something missing between those two beats.
Just slightly disjointed. And I can agree with that.
Yeah, and I don't mind it because the scene with the Emperor was so good, and the scene with Leia and the holster and her mom, and then going down and seeing Jimmy Smits and, you know, Ben coming off the ship, like all of that worked so well for me as an end to the show. And then obviously going back to Tatooine for the very end with Luke, and another character. But yeah, it felt like there was just one beat of something missing between those two moments, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, see, I had more of a problem with the Reva thing than anything else, because we saw her, and then all of a sudden, just that was it. And there was like, I liked her general conclusion, but it was just like such a big character to just then all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, but what happened? Like, where? I know.
What do you mean?
I know she's free, quote unquote, but like, you said you don't know where Roken is. I'm more concerned with where Reva's going to go or what she's going to be doing or something. I would like that character more tied up. But that makes me think that we're going to see her again. That's my guess. That's me. Wasn't enough for me. I'm firm on that point. I do not. That was one of my only like negatives, was like, I just don't really like it. Her part at the end felt rushed. And then her conclusion, which was really cool, like, I mean, you know, like her decision, obviously, not to kill Luke, her making that choice and having that comparison to basically what Anakin did, especially after his fight with Obi-Wan, you know, and her and Obi-Wan having that conversation was great. I just would like to have any even tiny hint of where she is after this is all. Anything. So that's me, though. That was one of my only negatives, though. Other than that, I loved it.
I don't know about you, Claudia. I felt like Reva's storyline ended at the emotional conclusion of her season-long story, so I didn't really need to know what was next. Like, just the promise that she was still around was enough for me.
It didn't really bug me all that much. I was like, okay, what, especially whenever she had that such emotional conversation with Obi-Wan, is like, have I become him in, you know, my chase for him?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you made this decision that makes you not him. And like that look of relief and, you know, her throwing down her Sith lightsaber and, you know, kind of disconnecting herself from the person she's been since she was a youngling, that felt like a really good arc overall. And for me, I was like, okay, I feel good about where you're at. I don't need to know everything right now. Sure, I'm guessing we'll probably see her in something else again because she is alive.
Season 2 of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yeah,
exactly. So I felt content with that, but that was more of a tie-up than, you know, Roken, you know, that they're safe. They got into hyperspace or hyperdrive. They got it fixed. That wasn't tied up as neatly for me. And, like, knowing that they got back to Alderaan, I mean, all of those pieces, it's like, okay, we just kind of jumped there to there to there.
I mean, as much as I love Roken and all those other things, like, there are some things we don't necessarily need to see. Like, do we really need to see Leia being delivered? Like, I'm just thinking of, like, pure, like, trying to create an episode of television here. Do we need to see Leia delivered? No, we know she's going to get there. Do we need to see where Roken's going again? No, not necessarily. He's not really even nearly as big of a character as Reva or some of these other characters. So, like, yeah, I wish there was some kind of hint to where he was going, but, like, I don't know. I found her to be more of a big deal than those two, and I know I'm alone on that between you two, and that's fine, but I don't need those in-between delivery moments, though, at least, between Leia and all that stuff, personally.
The thing about the Roken moment for me isn't actually about Roken. It's about the fact that Obi-Wan makes a sacrifice for them to escape. And so showing the moment where the thing is fixed and they get to hyperdrive, and, like, as the Star Destroyer is bearing down on them, they get into hyperdrive and they get away.
Yeah.
And it could have been a shot. That could have
it's showing the success of Obi-Wan's sacrifice.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's showing the purpose of his sacrifice in that moment. Right. You don't need it, right? But obviously, I love the episode and it's not in there, so obviously they didn't need it. But
yeah.
It would have been a visual representation within the show of what was accomplished by him going down to whatever the planet that they fight on. My question about Reva, and this is kind of a structural one with this episode, which is, like, the one thing structurally that's a little odd is that coming out of last week's episode, the first thing that happens this week is we're on Tatooine and Reva is at the, like, water dispenser dude. I didn't know what was going on. She's trying to get a snow cone, essentially. and then it cuts to the Star Destroyer bearing down on Roken's ship. And there's just a part of me that was like, it just in terms of, like, timing, it felt odd to make the statement visually that she had somehow managed to get to Tatooine, despite the fact that she had been stabbed with a lightsaber, in the amount of time that the Star Destroyer had been actively chasing Roken's ship and shooting at them. And so just I wish those scenes had been flipped, just so that we could have there would have been for the audience some time between her getting stabbed and being left in the dust, and then we see her on Tatooine within the story of the show. is opposed to this, where it's like, how did she get there?
She has Jedi teleportation. I'm just kidding. I mean, that's not a thing. Force,
this is not the EU.
Force speed.
Powers like that don't exist anymore.
No, that's a good point. The editing there kind of failed a little bit, because if we look at this from just the logical standpoint, what had to have happened because was that, you're right, those should have been flipped, because by the time we reach the end of Obi-Wan's conclusion, he finds out Luke's in trouble. There's been so much going on at that point in time that there is literally no way Reva, like, it has flipped the timeline. Like, they were being chased, and at some point while they were being chased by the Star Destroyer, Reva finally got off that planet and started heading towards Tatooine. And then probably when Luke and Obi-Wan were on the planet, Reva was starting to do her thing. Like, that's how it really was. The way they shot, or at least the way they presented it, was actually quite the opposite, like Nerdy said. So yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Obi-Wan gets from his fight with Vader to
Tatooine
so fast.
Yeah, and if we look at the way they presented that, we're basically saying, like, and I don't think this is actually what happened timeline wise, but the way they presented it was, like Nerdy said, like Obi-Wan got, like, you know, felt that in the Force that he was in trouble, and then just boom, I'm there, boom, yeah, this happened. Like, as if he, like, as if, like, while she's chasing him on the cliffside, that's when he, like, got from A to B. And I'm like, that's impossible.
I mean,
so,
are they just, like, neighbor planets? Like, it's got to be, like, under a parsec if we're looking at a hyperdrive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's always, like, it's going to take a little bit longer. It's not going to take long enough based off of how many parsecs it is. And you will never understand it. But also,
it's,
like,
it's very strange that the dropship has a hyperdrive core. Like, that was very weird to me.
I forgot he was in the hyperdrive.
Also, why wouldn't you take the hyperdrive
from a very small ship? Very small ship. I know what you're about to say. Why wouldn't? Because there's a lot of people in that cargo ship.
But Star Wars has never established that there are, like, different sizes of hyperdrive.
Exactly. It's just like,
you know what I mean?
No, you're so right.
It's just weird. It's weird that the Star problem Wars is logic. That they can't get away from the Star Destroyer, but they have a smaller ship in their ship that can go to hyperdrive. There was definitely a moment where I was like, I don't. Because when he, like, gets off the planet, I was like, oh, Roken's going to, like, pop out of hyperdrive, pick him up, and take him. And then he just goes to hyperdrive, and I was like, oh, I guess.
Yeah,
I just assumed it was, like, the same hyperdrive, and I was like, this is just Star Wars logic. We're not going to understand this.
It's one of those things where, like, TIE fighters and X-Wings didn't have hyperdrives in the original trilogy. And, you had to get into a bigger ship. And then over time, they've kind of been like, ships of any size can kind of have a hyperdrive, but now we're saying, like, escape pods have hyperdrives, and I was like,
well, see, that's right. What I thought he was gonna get in was, I thought he was gonna get in, like, a legit space pod, where, like, escape pod, where it's just the escape pod, and all he could do is basically, like, hang in space or go down to the planet, not like a full-on mini ship that came out of the small ship. So I do agree with that. Like, you're definitely right on that one. But let's talk about things that we like. We do love this episode, but maybe it doesn't sound like we do. We definitely do. Let's talk about some of our favorite things of this episode. Anyone want to? Who's favorite?
Claudia, do you want to go first? I have so I like I could literally talk for 7 and
that's
a half
true.
Hours.
I can, like, talk about majority. So let's start with Claudia.
Could talk about the line, you didn't kill Anakin Skywalker, I did.
Oh, I guess.
I will for years.
I will never recover from that. That was amazing writing. So anyways, yeah, Claudia, go ahead.
I mean, the writing was fantastic between, like I said, I really enjoyed the Reva and Obi-Wan conversation of, you know, have I become Anakin?
Yeah.
Or, like, have I come Darth Vader?
Oh, that was really good.
And then also when Obi-Wan, you know, during that conversation, is like, goodbye, Darth. Like, him finally addressing him as Darth versus Anakin, for me, was such a big flip. And also just, like, the overall, like, change in Obi-Wan since we've seen him in episode 1. He was so, you know, inside of himself at that point. He was, you know, tucked away. He was scared. And now he was like, you know, I'm going to go protect people. I'm going to be a Jedi again. It was such a different Ben Kenobi from episode 1 to episode 6, and seeing that arc and, you know, those conversations that we've seen develop with, you know, Anakin / Darth. I really, really enjoyed that overall, and definitely enjoyed it in this final battle sequence between them.
Yeah, I can't help but feel like it feels more natural to call him Vader, right? But I can't help but feel that they deliberately wrote it as Darth because Alec Guinness calls him Darth in A New Hope.
I was going to say, yeah, that's
probably. And it feels like one of those things where I was like, oh, like, because even when he says, like, goodbye, Darth.
Well, yeah. I looked into that, and, like, I thought the same thing. I think partially it's because they're kind of, like, connecting / making that make sense. But also, I think I liked an opinion that I saw is he's kind of throwing that in his face because he had that moment, right, that we'll talk about where he, you know, says, you know, I killed Anakin, basically. And he goes, all right, well, then you're not Anakin. You are just all that's left, which is just pure evil. Not even Vader, just Darth. That's all you are. You are just a Sith. You are nothing else. That is all you are to me. So I felt like that was a tough line to kind of work in, because I do feel like it was kind of a rework almost. But I do feel like he was throwing his face.
Well, and I think that it leads to Darth Vader yelling Obi-Wan. But it was so funny because I want like a GIF that's that Obi-Wan leading into Darth Maul's Kenobi from Rebels.
Kenobi.
Because he can't yell Kenobi moment.
No.
Because the yelling that while, you know, dying on your knees in a planet is just such a like.
So it's a Darth Maul.
That is Maul's thing. It's so iconically Sam Witwer yelling that.
Yeah.
So much so that like he did it on stage at Celebration, right?
Yeah.
And so it was just when he yelled Obi-Wan, it's such a good moment. But in my brain, I immediately like heard Sam Witwer yelling Kenobi. And I was like, oh, yeah.
100%.
This is strange. I love that Kenobi kind of gets his like. Kenobi has these weird parallels with his villains in the same way that Ahsoka and Obi-Wan have this weird parallel in the way that they meet Darth Vader.
Yeah.
For the final time. And, you know, it's like poetry. It rhymes, as the creator himself said. But yeah, Obi-Wan. How did you guys feel about the mix of the voice changer and Hayden's voice?
So I did actually talk about that in the breakdown. I'll be honest. I absolutely loved that moment. We had James Earl Jones and Hayden Christensen, and it was kind of flipping back and forth. Sometimes they melded the audio together. And I thought
James Earl Jones, but...
I mean, that's what they've
said. A computer program that's heard so much James.
But they've also said that he's done some of the lines in Kenobi. But yes, a lot of it's computer. Yeah, for sure. But I think that moment was very symbolic in a lot of ways. I feel like that was the last conversation he really had that had any shred of Anakin, at least with Obi-Wan. The reason I say that is kind of like the conversation they end up having really is like, it's kind of like he's almost out of his own skin, no like pun intended with his burned skin, but Vader's basically like, and nerdy, the line that we both talked about that way, I think we both could talk about forever, is when he, you know, basically says, which I said in the breakdown, in my personal opinion, I think when he basically tells Obi-Wan, look, you didn't do this, like you didn't kill Anakin, I killed Anakin, like there is no one left, like he's not here anymore, this is it, I did that. Whereas I kind of look at that and say, that's like the last decent thing Anakin, whatever's left of him, is throwing towards his master, kind of like relieving him of some of his guilt. Because this entire time he's one, he thought he killed his friend the entire time. Two, then he thought he didn't, but basically he created this monster all on his own. So now it's kind of like not relieving all of his sins, but like a little bit. And I feel like that is not a Darth Vader thing to do. That's like an Anakin thing to do. And so I liked the going back and forth between the voices and almost like it's like almost like a split personality in a weird way. But there's really 99% dominant is Darth Vader.
Well, plus the framing of it, too, is so interesting with, you know, his helmet's broken.
Yeah.
You see half of his face. You see the other bit. He's split, just still the same as he has been, you know, during the prequels and then now. So there was a lot of really great elements with the light. It was a very dark episode overall. We were watching during the day. The glare was terrible, honestly. Was
some dark scenes.
Because it is. It's such a dark landscape. You know, the things that you see is you see those, like there's like, you know, the backup shots of seeing the lightsabers throughout these, you know, large pillars of rock.
Those are really cool shots.
There's some really cool shots in there. So I definitely enjoyed, you know, the art direction on that overall.
What about you, Nerdy?
The way they used... You know, lightsabers over time have become more vibrant and have given off more light. When you watch the original trilogy, they're very much like katanas that are colored.
Yeah.
Whereas now they're used to light scenes in the way that we would use, an LED rod or something like that. And I think it's really effective. I think that the way that Deborah Chow used the blue and the red against the two faces, especially with Vader in that scene where he's down. And you watch there's less and less blue on him as that scene goes on until he delivers those final lines purely cloaked in red light. I thought that was just so effective and more stylistic than I feel like a lot of Star Wars cinematography allows itself to be.
For sure.
So I really appreciated that. There was stuff in this episode that felt very much like almost like Quentin Tarantino-esque in the way that it was shot. Huh. Or almost like an indie film. And I appreciated that element of it.
Yeah.
There were a couple of times where I could have used a little bit more light.
Agreed. It was, again, a little dark, but I know that that was part of the messaging overall.
Yeah.
And the visual storytelling. But I would have liked to see a little bit better.
But I had no problem in the entire Obi-Wan Vader fight. That's because the lightsabers were so constant.
Reva.
When Luke Skywalker falls down that hill... The actual shot of Luke Skywalker rolling down the hill is I went back and watched it a couple times when I was editing our reaction earlier, and I was like, it's so dark.
Yeah, can't see anything.
But like, I was like, did he die? Like,
yeah, exactly.
My first thought was like, did they shoot it so dark because it's a kid getting hurt and they wanted to hide that? Or I couldn't figure it out. But like, there were a couple times on Tatooine once they leave the farmstead, and we need to talk about the farm because like, very cool. But where I could have used just a little bit.
Just a little bit
more light. And it worked for when Reva had her lightsaber on, but when Reva's lightsaber was on, when Obi-Wan lands back on Tatooine and Owen and Beru are like looking for Luke.
In the dark. You can't even see them. That's the thing. It's like,
they saw the ship coming. They're like, yeah, we can't see anything. We
have lightsabers. Well, didn't they have flashlights?
Yeah.
Like, I guess there's no such thing as, you know, Star Wars flashlights. You're just SOL. Like, there's only lightsabers.
Luke also manages to run like a mile away. And so, like, because when they cut back to the farm and Luke is gone and they're yelling for him, there's just nothing in any direction, which looks really cool because you're like, oh my God, where did this kid go? But there was a part of me that was like, Luke ran like a mile. Like, Luke's a 10-year-old who, like, he ran a 5K.
He's a runner. He's a track star.
And Reva has a stomach wound and she ran just as far to catch him. This is wild.
Fueled by
anger.
Hatred will get you very far in the Star Wars universe.
Hatred will get you to Tatooine and we will never know how.
The parallels between Reva in this and Kylo Ren's story in the sequel trilogy were so fascinating to me.
Oh, yeah.
Even down to, like, the only reason that Beru and Owen stand a chance is because of her stomach wound, much in the same way that Rey and Finn, in his own way, stand up to Kylo in Force Awakens because he's been shot in the stomach with a bowcaster. There are parallels. There's such strong parallels between Reva and Ben in ways that are just so fascinating. Even the shot of, because they echo the shot again from last week of Vader looking down before he's got the suit, but it's Vader and it's Hayden and him stabbing Reva as a child is so similar in vibe and in coloring and in angle to the triptych of the way that Luke is looking down on Ben in The Last Jedi. And so the ways like the cinematography pulls from The Last Jedi into this episode were so strong and into last week as well. And so it was just so interesting that Reva and Kylo Ren have this very similar kind of like struggle within them. And even almost like a similar ending in terms of like Reva is so desperate to kill Vader and Ben successfully kills Snoke. Like the push and pull of their two stories against one another was just so fascinating to me. And it's unexpected for them to call so heavily towards a sequel trilogy storyline in this. But the parallels are like unbelievably strong between those two characters.
Yeah, I didn't actually think about those two characters having that parallel, to be honest with you. I was thinking a lot towards some of the other ones. So that's good. Those are good points. Yeah, I definitely see it.
I was going to say, and also whenever I was watching it, at least with like, again, the lighting and, you know, the use of color, it brought me back to the second of the sequel trilogy, because that was such a big focus for Star Wars overall. Like, the first time we've kind of really seen intense, you know, light and darkness is visual storytelling in in the Star Wars universe.
Where were we at with our predictions? I know that we thought we kind of were mixed on if we thought Reva was going to die. She doesn't. They did not officially announce Obi-Wan season two. In fact, Kathleen Kennedy and Ewan McGregor have very recently, since it aired, been heard talking about it. But other than that, like, they haven't confirmed anything.
There will be a season two.
Yeah. It's
your most successful show of all time on your platform.
That's what I said. Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be six episodes of Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon meditating, but there will be a season two of this show.
And there will be an audience if it is just the meditating series. With
If you got Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson to wear Jedi robes and sit and just chat for 6 hours, I would watch all six hours.
I would watch that.
You would. It could even be like a headspace, you know, Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon. Yeah. Yes, you're going to clear your mind.
Yep.
Every Star Wars fan would be
Obi-Wan at the end, the terms of down to the very last detail almost of what he's wearing at the end, and said this in the other video as well, it all comes from a comic of the adventures he basically has on Tatooine, though specifically, leading up to A New Hope. It found by Luke when he read the journal, essentially, of Ben Kenobi. So, they're very much if they wanted to, they're definitely setting it up. Though, you know, obviously Deborah Chow and people like that, the crew were more this is a limited series, but things change when you have that much success, I think.
And I think if they're going to do a season two, I think it would be interesting because Hayden has also openly said that he wants to do season two. Yep. I don't think that Obi-Wan and Vader can run into each other again.
Right.
I really do feel like this is the last moment of that.
Agreed. And I was going to ask you about that. How did you feel, Nerdy? Because you've been saying throughout this series that the only way for this to work is for Vader to think he's dead. So how did you feel about the cameo twist? Because I didn't know that Ian was going to be there as Sidious. I don't know why I didn't think of that, but I didn't. And what did you think of the twist of him basically being like, you're clearly obsessed. This is he basically says you need to stop. I don't give a crap about him. I want we're dominating the galaxy over here. He basically tells him straight up you need to stop. So how did you feel about that?
I don't think that is necessarily what is happening there. I think that Vader knows that he can't win that fight, right? Vader is a puppy dog licking his wounds. And so I think that in order for them to do a season two, I think that we need to see Reva and Vader have a rematch. I think that Reva and Vader's rematch needs to involve her dying. And I think that in that, she has to impart upon Vader that, not has to, there's many things they could do, right? We could never see Reva again. Who knows? But I think it would make sense for Reva to impart upon Vader that Obi-Wan is dead. But I think that Vader now doesn't go after Obi-Wan, not because he thinks that he's dead. I think I'm not going to win that fight, right? He gets his ass handed to him in this episode, badly. He gets destroyed.
Yeah, but he's still super obsessed with finding him afterwards until he talks to Palpatine. Palpatine's this seems to be making you weaker.
Yeah, he almost
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just mean in terms of telling stories from here on. Oh, if they do a season two, Vader and Obi-Wan can't go head-to-head again.
Yeah, I agree. No. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Otherwise, Obi-Wan just has to beat him up again. They could. Obi-Wan has to win. I don't think there's an emotional narrative to be told in them meeting again.
No.
But I do think there is in Reva in season two getting trained by Obi-Wan a little bit for her confrontation with Vader and losing. I think that would be an interesting season two way, because obviously you want Vader to come back, so it's who interacts with him.
True.
I think Reva's kind of the best option. I think that Obi-Wan fights some of the other Inquisitors protecting Reva at some point. I think we see Reva, Obi-Wan back-to-back fighting off Inquisitors. There's some cool stuff there. But I ultimately don't think Obi-Wan and Vader fight again, but I do think Reva and Vader do.
Yeah, me too. I was just more wondering what you thought about, instead of him thinking he's dead, it's just more down boy type thing. I was just curious about that.
Yeah, because Sidious needs him, right?
He does. He needs him focused.
Sidious doesn't want to lose his... He doesn't even need him focused. He needs him to die. Angry. And honestly, from Sidious's point of view, Vader knowing that Obi-Wan is still alive and there's nothing he can do about it is infuriating.
Yeah.
Which Insidious' mind is like, great, be mad.
Yeah, all the time. Just keep being
mad.
What
are you going to do about it?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, no, I was just unexpected for me. I definitely was with Nerdy, thinking they were going to, like, you know, try to, like, thinking he was dead the whole time. But, like, I thought the Sidious thing and him getting beat up and all that, I thought it was a good good way to do it, actually.
I think so, too. But one thing I will say, I think Reva is not going to say that Obi-Wan's dead. I think Reva's going to drop that he has kids, because how else would he know that Luke is his son?
So Boba Fett tells Vader that Luke is his son in a comic book.
Yeah.
Is that
after
canon?
New Hope. Yeah. So after New Hope, Vader sends Boba Fett on a mission to, like, find out stuff for him. And he comes back. It's a great panel where he's like, the boy's name is Skywalker. And it's Vader's fist clenched. And then Vader's standing in front of this big Imperial glass window and it shatters in front of him. And it, like, all the glass cracks everywhere from him, just his anger and him realizing that it's his son. They cannot retcon it. It is, like, truly one of the best comic moments in all of Star Wars comics. And so, no, Vader can't know about Luke until after the Death Star.
Yep.
Got it. Okay. Yep.
And if Reva survives until then, things get weird. Here's the problem. Yeah. I love that Star Wars keeps telling us Jedi survive Order 66. I'm so glad that Gungi is back. But at some point, we have to deal with the fact that there are so many people who can use the Force and have lightsabers who don't help Luke at any point in the original trilogy. And it gets a little weird, right? Like, almost all the Inquisitors we know about, we know how they die before A New Hope. A lot of the lightsaber wielders we know, but, like, there's a couple loose threads that you're like, what were you doing? What were we doing for the war against the Empire? Seems like it was kind of important. And so Reva needs to die, unfortunately, because Moses Ingram is fantastic. But
yeah, or she just fades in the background, but I really doubt they're just gonna let her fade in the background. I don't think you keep her alive for that. So she'll definitely die at some point if she comes back up.
So
the other thing,
oh, go ahead.
If they don't want to do Obi-Wan season two, the other thing I would love is Quinlan and Reva getting a show together.
Oh, wow.
Where Quinlan trains Reva on the path. Because we need to know what happens to Quinlan now that he's been brought up,
yeah,
right?
His name, like, dropped real hard in this show. So
Quinlan was here.
Yeah.
So if season two of Obi-Wan involves Quinlan and Reva being like a Jedi pairing, like Quinlan and another character who I don't want to spoil because Claudia doesn't know about this yet. Because in that storyline, that female character, very important to Quinlan's life, dies. If Quinlan Vos,
if you want to talk,
no, I don't want to spoil for anyone because we're watching Clone Wars. There's stuff that I don't want to spoil.
There's people listening, I guarantee, that still probably haven't seen Clone Wars, so it's not just you.
There's a character important to Quinlan who dies, and if he can get some sort of emotional, like, retribution for that character, by being there for Reva, I think that would be a really beautiful thing to see in live action, which would be a live action show continuing the storyline of a book that was originally supposed to be episodes of an animated series, which is the weirdest, like, only Star Wars could do something so bizarre.
I could do it, though.
But I would love that.
Yeah, that'd be some really interesting closure, actually. Let's talk about the farm scene. I know that Nerdy's pretty hot on this. I saw him tweet about it. I definitely 100% agree with him. Let's just go ahead and say it. Beru's a badass. Just comes in swinging. She doesn't just come in swinging with a blaster. She comes in swinging at Owen, because one of my favorite lines actually was Owen comes in and they're like, it tells her what's up, right? And the conversation is basically like, you know, where's Ben? Well, you know, he's not here. She's like, gee, whose fault is that? It's like pushing away the one guy that can help us right now.
She burns him as bad as he burned Ben in episode one.
100%.
Yep. Like, there's like a cycle of roasting happening on Tatooine that ultimately ends in both of them getting roasted.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like your patch, right?
He meant A New Hope.
Oh, I know. Literally burned but he has the patch, the Amperu's dark roast.
Oh, God.
I forgot about that patch.
Full circle. It's so dark.
But celebration callback. I do have Amperu's dark roast.
Yeah. Okay.
Which I would drink because I love a cup of Jav.
That scene I thought was really cool, and just her response of like, all right, well, it's just you and me, we're doing this, we're gonna do it, like, she's gonna be here at nightfall. Like, Beru is just all of a sudden turned up, like, all right, let's do this. Let's hunt some Sith. Like, okay, girl.
It like felt like we were suddenly in a Predator movie.
Yeah, it did. That's what I'm
like,
saying.
Beru is like she pulls like a piece of the wall out and starts pulling guns out of the wall.
And Owen's
like, what is happening?
Owen's like, whoa, who are you?
Part of me like be like, I feel like they could take him down. I'm like, these are just civilians against a Sith. Why did I think, like, but they held up pretty well, all things considered.
It's called mom power. It's called like moms who lift cars. But, and also Reva had a literal hole in her whole body.
Yeah, that's true.
Also fair. I did love the scene, you know, when she is hunting for Luke and Owen has that pipe and they're like going back and forth. I was like,
about that.
What?
Owen, yeah. What's the plan here, bud? With the pipe versus the lightsaber. Who's going to win?
I just love that he's like, she's coming. He gets like thrown down. She's coming. And then the door opens and Beru just punches Reva in the face.
Oh, my God. Like,
what? God damn. But also, when they're on the bridge, Owen realizes she's hurt and like grabs her like injury.
The wound. Yeah, I saw that.
I was really enjoying how like smart. It was a little dumb a little bit earlier when Owen's like kicking flower boxes at Reva. And I was like,
come on, you were supposed to be
kicking flower boxes.
That feels in a weird way realistic, though, right? Like, well, if you were in that moment and things are going down, you just like would do anything you can as a civilian who's not a trained Jedi. You're just like, oh, go away. Like,
they made it seem like, oh, Beru is like, all right, we need to get into position. And it is full daytime. And so I thought there was going to be like booby traps.
Same.
And them getting into position was like them sitting on either sides of the courtyard and just blasting.
They're farmers. They don't have a bunch of traps laying around. They're water moisture farmers.
Stuff. They literally have like what are they called? What are the rats called? The
Womp rats.
Womp rats. They're 2 meters long, Jeffers.
They are big.
They use the T-16.
I know, but Womp rats are longer than I am.
Yeah.
They could have a couple traps in her. It was just funny that she's like, we've got to get into position. And then them getting into position was like them hanging out in their living room.
Yeah.
Like,
and then her decking Reva in the face.
Also,
yeah.
to be fair, there's like a lot of time between sunset and nightfall because there's two suns, you know? It's not even the first one you gotta wait for. You got the second one. Like
that's fair. All right. You got two suns. The liberal use I've been seeing on Twitter of the Danny DeVito, I started blasting, but it's Beru.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's very funny.
It was really funny to not see this character the entire series, but then see her the way she is in this last episode was pretty fun to watch.
Well, and what I want to talk about, because we're getting a little long here, but before we get out of here, I think that what is so amazing about this finale and why I think it is one of my favorite pieces of... maybe my favorite piece of Star Wars media since Disney took over outside of Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it does the same thing that Rogue One does, which is it enriches A New Hope in ways that I never expected from the Kenobi show. Like, I didn't really expect Kenobi to make the original trilogy better. But getting to know Owen and Beru and how fiercely and deeply they love Luke in this show, and particularly in the finale, makes them at the beginning of that movie better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And getting to know how deeply and fiercely Leia loved Ben and Ben loved Leia and Luke. Like, this is the first time we've really seen how much these kids mean to Ben because of how much he loved Padme and Anakin.
Yeah.
And the power of that leading to the moment where Ben gets Luke and gets to go, this is your father's lightsaber. Like, I don't think I'll be able to watch A New Hope without the emotional connection of this show anymore. And the fact that it is so positive and such a net positive in terms of the Star Wars, the Skywalker saga as a whole for me, is the success of the show and why I think Deborah Chow and her team and everyone, they really crushed it here. I there's so much in A New Hope now that's going to mean more because of this.
Yeah.
I mean, even from the first thing, whenever Leia's recording, like, you know, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, she has only talked to him when she was 10. And now she's like, this is my last call for help. Like, this is the last person that helped me.
Who else would she call?
A tired old man. From, you know, Vader's or the Inquisitor's castle, right?
The Inquisitorious.
Yeah, Inquisitorious castle. And so for that to happen, yeah, that would be the first person I call.
Yeah,
he's done it once.
The moment where he gets off the ship at the end, And she's like, oh. And then Lola flies out and she's like, Lola.
Yeah. Such a little kid in that moment.
I wanted Ben to be like, what am I, chopped liver? Like,
yo, kid, I'm right here.
I also desperately want a Lola for like the dash of my car after seeing him put Lola on
the little
deck.
Like one on a spring.
Oh there. My gosh, she's so cute.
Yeah, I do love all the subtle nods between Leia and Obi-Wan as well, because she at the end calls him Obi-Wan. And then in A New Hope, she's like the only one that calls him basically Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he's like, I haven't heard that name in a long time. So yeah, I think Nerdy's right. It does really enrich A New Hope. For me, it also like gives a breath of fresh air a little bit to Revenge of the Sith, just kind of see like what's coming after. It really deepens Vader as well from like, if you haven't seen some of the animated stuff, I think if you haven't seen any of the animated shows, because those really flesh out Vader as well, then I think this really fleshes out Vader as a character for you, especially for A New Hope, because you really start to see more of like the nuances and emotional and two sides of him going on. So it's really fascinating. So I think the show just killed it all around. Also, we have to say before we leave, Qui-Gon. We got Qui-Gon, and
Right, Liam Neeson.
We got Qui-Gon. We got Qui-Gon, and I lost it. I was.
Yeah, remember when you said it was only the voice, and I was like, no, we're getting full on Liam Neeson.
Yeah, we are. And I looked into that, and before Nerdy says something, I looked into that. The reasoning they're using basically here is, yes, when he died, he had not finished the training, so he could speak to the living but not take physical form. But, the Star Wars logic they're using basically is, from that point to whenever he... did it, he's still able to train basically, and like was able to eventually take a physical form. It just took him a long time, and he kind of basically self-taught the rest of the way, and it took many, many years.
And he's not at the end of Return of the Jedi, because Luke would have looked over and been like,
who are you? Yeah, who's that guy? Yeah.
I want to just say two very quick things before I will be done. First of all, Hayden Christensen like was so good last week, but like just his performance in this episode was fantastic.
Oh, so good.
I would really love to see more of him in anything, because he's so good in this and broke my heart. The other thing is, we got a new alien and I love him so much, because he is, what if a mustache was an alien?
Oh, yeah.
The salesman from like the second scene of the show.
Yeah.
I saw him and I was like, that is the funniest. Like, what if a handlebar mustache came to life? And was an alien.
Literally.
The design is perfect. And I love very strange Star Wars characters. Mm-hmm. I don't know that character's name yet. I promise you I will very soon know what that character's name is.
Oh, I know.
And I will love him. And at Celebration 2029, when they have the like very special shirt of that one guy,
I will
buy it.
Yeah.
Because he popped on screen and I was immediately enamored with the design. It's just, it's so good.
That's definitely a nerdy character.
I feel like that sums the whole episode. So good. Like,
that's what we're summing up. Okay.
The
mustache.
You know, the series is great. I really enjoyed it. I think it enriched the overall, New Hope, everything else. Like, it meant a lot. And for me, who hasn't seen all of the animated shows yet, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And it kept getting better.
Yeah. And it
also
did.
Required no prerequisite knowledge outside of,
that's true.
The prequels and then
out of six movies.
Yeah, six
still,
movies.
Still,
yeah.
I have all the animated shows and everything.
There's
else
so
you could
much
have
Star
needed
Wars
to
content,
know.
To be fair.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think it was funny watching some of the discourse online over the course of, 5 weeks-ish. And it was funny to watch people who were really impatient really start to flip the switch I saw online about, episode 4 or 5. And I'm just like, yeah, like it's a whole show. Like I even see some people like they want their cake now, and I'm like, it's building up. It is there is a payoff. That's what it is. Like
if this had come out as a movie as it was originally intended to,
yeah,
I don't think you would have seen any of that discourse happen.
No, you wouldn't.
I think that it was the tension of a main character story on Disney Plus boiling over every week. And having to wait for the next part of the story. Because the one thing I will say about Obi-Wan as a whole is that it is not a television show. It isn't set up like a television show very well. And it feels like a movie script that was stretched out a little bit. And so I think that I understand the feeling of they should have put this out as a movie. And I do get that. I wish that it had felt a little bit more television-y. I wish there had been a little bit more of a like thematic introduction by episode that kind of had storylines. I think episode 4 did a really good job of paying off its storyline within that episode. But outside of that, there was a little bit of a like movie feeling that you were just like, oh, I'll watch the next part of the movie next week. And so I do understand that. And so now that I think we've seen all of it, I think we're going to see the genuine response to what this story holds for the audience, as opposed to what we got in the middle of it, which was people kind of being like, where's the next piece? Why did we end here? You know? Yeah. And I think that the character who's hurt most by that is Reva. I think the character who's helped most by that is Leia, because Leia's storyline feels the most television-y and is told in bits that way.
Yep.
But Reva, in terms of her arc, would have benefited from a movie viewing experience of her arc as opposed to what we got. And I think that that's where some of that tension comes from. And then the rest of it is racism. And those people can, those people are never going to be happy. And like, we can't cater anything towards them.
So I don't care.
But there are people who I understand the criticism of the first half of the show's treatment of Reva, where it was a little bit hard to see where we were going at a time.
Yeah, but we don't always know where we're going.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I don't think, like, when we first started this podcast, we had a discussion about, like, Star Wars and TV and movies. Yeah. It's not pulling. I don't see it pulling back from TV at all. Even now that movies are back in the box office, I'm not saying they're not going to be doing Star Wars movies, but they're going to be consistently doing Star Wars shows, too. It's basically going to be, like, a kind of a Marvel thing. So, like, it'll be interesting to see the different takes, because, like, that's a good point. Like, this is a much different looking TV show than, like, other TV shows. It is like a movie chopped up. I'm good with that, but I can see why other people are not. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, I think Andor
will slow down though.
Yeah, I think Andor will look much different.
I think we're seeing with Ms. Marvel and Obi-Wan that it's tough for Marvel and Star Wars to happen at the same time.
Yeah,
from an audience perspective,
that has had to have hurt Ms. Marvel, to be honest.
Well, Ms. Marvel is the lowest rated.
Oh, that sucks.
It's the highest reviewed Marvel show on Disney Plus, right? It's I think a 95 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's fantastic. The first episodes, I haven't seen episode 3 yet, but the first episodes are amazing.
Wow.
But in terms of viewership, it is the lowest viewed Marvel show on Disney Plus since WandaVision, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that premiering a new show against Obi-Wan Kenobi,
it's
tough. Nice.
Yeah. It's tough. Especially about a superhero that like not as well known, obviously, as you know, one of the most famous Jedi.
Yeah, she's only been in comics for like 12 years, I think.
Yeah. So, like, to be honest, I knew that Ms. Marvel was coming and I knew there was going to be an overlap, but I already lost track that it had happened until I saw that you had put out a video and I was like, oh, wow, that show's already started. So, like, that right there is just a great example of, like, me as a Star Wars fan who would watch Ms. Marvel for sure, but I've had tunnel vision with this show.
It's like, fantastic. Ms. Marvel is of the Disney Plus shows, of every single show they've put on Disney Plus. Star Wars, Marvel, Mighty Ducks, all of it. Ms. Marvel has the best cinematography of all of them.
Wow.
It is shot.
You love cinematography.
So creatively. I've seen a lot of people compare it to Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Ooh, I love Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. The movie. A lot of people have compared it to that. There are some indoor crane shots that are like, there's one particular one where she lies, she like flips down on a couch. And the way her flipping down onto the couch is shot is so visually fantastic and amazing.
Interesting.
That I'm like, I'm just enjoying the shit out of it. It's such a good show. It is by the people who are going to be directing Batgirl next year on HBO Max.
Oh, that's awesome.
So like, my excitement for Batgirl is skyrocketing based on how they handle a camera. I'm just really happy with it. It's a great show.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are a Star Wars podcast, but we apparently also support Ms. Marvel.
Well, yeah, of course.
Well, but I thought it was relevant to talk about how Star Wars and Marvel they cannibalize each other a little bit. And they have to be careful. Oh yeah, but once the Star Wars movies are back, and once now that Marvel movies are happening, we're going to end up in this marketplace where Disney's going to have to really figure out how to have both of these giant, never-ending franchises playing side by side on a platform that has a limited viewership at the end of the day. Right? There's only so much content that you have to watch every other thing to understand that people are going to keep up with. And people are going to have to make a choice between Star Wars and Marvel for some people. Obviously, I won't. I'm going to watch. I still watch every CW show. Like, I'm the one guy who's like going to stick with, I mean, Batwoman's over, thank God. But I'm going to stick with The Flash until it runs itself into the ground. But for a lot of people, they're not going to want to watch every single Marvel and every single Star Wars thing. I wonder when that friction is going to start really heating up, because I don't think we're there yet. But I think the friction is starting with Kenobi and Ms. Marvel right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it is going forward, because there are a lot of Star Wars shows slated and there's a lot of like Marvel shows slated. So, yeah.
Andor and Bad Batch are going to come out on the same day every week. That's crazy.
So now even Star Wars are going to be kind of like, you know, going against each other. All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening or watching. I hope you enjoyed Kenobi, and you can find Jawa Chatter everywhere on the intranet. And who are you? Where do you find Claudia?
On the Twitter at IHateClapping7.
I pretty much did it just because I want to hear that. Mm-hmm. And Nerdy?
Yeah, you can follow me around the internet. I'm at Nerdy Nightly. I no longer stream on Twitch. I am a YouTuber. Full time now. Yeah. I am literally a full time YouTuber. And if you want to check out Clarus and I live reacting to the Kenobi finale, you can. It is the first time we've ever done that. And the video is performing way better than we expected. So more reactions and fewer spoiler chats from now on, because we like money. And also, it's true. If you want to watch me cry over this episode, I do a few times. So enjoy that.
Sound like you? I'm kidding. It definitely sounds like you. All right, and you
can find me. Cry?
No,
never. You can find me about Star Wars.
Just Jeffers or Just Jeffers Games, and that's it, folks. Let us know in the comments what you thought of the show. We'd love to hear it, and we will see you next week. And of course, Andor is coming up soon. So, may the Force be with you, Utini friends. Bye.